I don't know why. My theory is that they did the first study and then people forgot about it. And then so much time has gone by. The formula has changed 18,000 times. And they're like, whatever, this is a new combo now.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. This is the Chemist Confessions podcast. I'm Victoria.
And I'm Gloria.
And today we are continuing our vitamin C series. Today, I think it's kind of unique. We realize that there are still a lot of questions about vitamin C and specifically on layering actives with your vitamin C serum. So today we're going to try to get into it. It's a lot. We hope you're ready to nerd out with us and get into all the studies. I don't know. There's just like a lot of awkwardness in this category. What do you think, Gloria?
I think in general, it's just the whole active layering is such a big topic and it's a little painful for us to talk about, though we realized that I think a long time ago, we wrote a quick a blog post on combining actives like a pro. And we thought, hey, we cover our bases. We cover the relationship with all these major actives. Our work is done. And since then, I think the layering instructions, layering, scaremongering, layering, like know-how just got a lot more out of hand.
Totally. And so because of that, we're going to first actually cover kind of a review on what you should know about even layering actives as a concept. I think sometimes, like Gloria said, it's gotten so carried away that people are so afraid of even like combining products in a way, or I guess like layering products one after another. And so we should just review as to like what even happens when you layer incompatible ingredients.
Right. So there are two things when we look at, I have to say sometimes we get questions like, is it true that I can't layer A with B? And a lot of times we do a double take. I was like, wait, why not? But usually there are two major reasons that get cited. One is there is an incompatibility in the sense that if you layer A with B, then one or both of them will become useless. And then the second one is A plus B equals your skin will want to fly off your face because it is super irritating.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think, well, I think it all depends the scenario. A lot of the fear comes from papers that are probably combining these ingredients in very torture test, harsh scenarios. You know, you're thinking, think of a really long time at really high heat. You know, you're trying to account for all of these kind of special scenarios, what these would look like.
Right.
But for Gloria and I think when we always get this question, we generally feel like it's not too much of a worry because the act of layering is so temporary. And so the idea would be that this interaction of these ingredients are such a short time that most likely things are fine. But before you're like, okay, that's all I need to know and move on, we're actually going to go through the data specifically with vitamin C, because I think this ingredient gets a lot, there's just a lot of fear because probably because of its instability, its fussy nature, so that it just feels like this is that sensitive snowflake that needs a lot of care and your routine has to really cater to this product. So we're going to go through that data today to give you some peace of mind on what actives you can layer together and maybe even discuss some of those awkward pairings, things like niacinamide and even peptides. But first, I think there's a burning question that Gloria and I keep talking about that has been coming up consistently and all of our content that you guys have been asking us. And that's just even, how do you apply vitamin C properly on skin, dry or damp?
Yeah, I realize this has become such a huge topic where people swear by you have to apply vitamin C on wet skin or you have to apply it on dry skin. And usually you'll see people say you have to apply it on dry skin. And again, my first reaction when I saw this question is like, I'm sorry, why? Like, why is the concern coming up? I was genuinely confused and I looked at a couple of people, a couple of things that talk about it. And it seems like the theme is vitamin C is very fussy. It is highly unstable. Therefore, if you apply it on wet skin, that exposure is going to cause it to degrade faster or something like that. I will say, and if there are other reasons cited, let us know, but I'm going to address this one specifically. First of all, your vitamin C serum is in water. It's in a lot more water than water that's on your skin. And we chemists, like, that's the whole spiel with C. ferulic, is how do you stabilize vitamin C in a water-based solution? So your skin, even when it's very saturated, the topmost layer is pretty dry. We're talking about probably 30 to 40% water content. It is a lot less than what's in your vitamin C serum. You're not exactly taking it from a waterless environment and all of a sudden introducing it to a lot of water. That is not the case here. So, well, so I find that concept really, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I would say we wouldn't worry, especially because vitamin C is typically the first step in your routine. You want to give it the best chance to penetrate and do well for your skin. I would say, hey, like post-washing your face, you do not have to sit there and dehydrate your skin before applying it. Nor do you really have to like really saturate your face and make it super wet before applying it. It's just not a thing that I have seen any data on it being an issue.
Yeah. And I just want to add that, you know, we've talked about how historically vitamin C has been tested how many times under how many clinical tests. I can guarantee you they are not giving a specific protocol to these subjects to say that you must apply on absolutely dry or wet skin. And please take that and you apply that to every single damp versus dry, I guess, question that it seems to be applied to every ingredient. I've heard we've been getting that for hyaluronic acid, for all these other actives. So just want to keep that in mind. Gore and I are probably going to do a dedicated episode to that concept and where all that's coming from in the future. But just while you are hearing that buzz right now and seemingly makes you feel like you need to be so mindful of that, just know that not to worry. That's like, that's the least of the challenges here, guys. So
But that's it. We just want to address that very quickly.
Yes, exactly. And so with that, we should move on because we've got a lot of actives to talk about. But really quick, let's take a quick break. Did you know our double play retinol can be used for both face and eye? It took us 2 years to create a formula that was dermatologist approved for the eye area, but effective enough to use for full face. And if you don't believe us, just check out our clinical test. Actually, after just 6 weeks of use, our subjects saw significant improvement for dark circles, crow's feet, and hyperpigmentation, and we actually got even more results at 12 weeks as well. So we're really proud of this formula. And for all of our loyal podcast listeners, please use code CCPODCAST2024 and get 15% off your first order.
All right. So when we're talking about pairing, let's start with the positive. Yes. Let's start with pairings that, you know, we have that have testing that show that it seemed to do pretty well with vitamin C.
Yeah. And I think the first one we're going to get out of the way because we already covered it is maticasticide. There is an actual clinical that we discussed about how 0.1% maticasticide along with 5% vitamin C was used for 6 months and showed improvement in signs of photoaging. So that is one just to get out of the way. But we should move on to an ingredient or ingredient category that I think people might have a couple questions on, and that's around AHAs. You're thinking of lower pH. So generally that should be fine. I think the question may be about general irritation and whatnot. So we did find a paper, a one lone paper, that tested lactic acid at 8% in combination with 1% ascorbic acid. This is obviously more very on the gentle side.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. And they tested 70 subjects with medium to dark skin tones that are exhibit facial age spots or discolorations. And they wanted them to use a combination of this 8.8, it's actually very specific, 8.8% lactic acid in combination with 1% ascorbic acid. And they actually did a kind of detailed comparison study to test the hyperpigmentation benefits over this 12-week period. We'll show the results here. As we should mention, this paper has a typo. The results in the table chart you'll see, they meant to compare this combination with lactic acid alone and ascorbic acid alone. But if you see in the table that we share, they wrote that it's 8.8% lactic acid and 1% lactic acid. And I'm pretty sure that is incorrect. It's supposed to be 1% ascorbic acid. So there's that. Yeah. Doesn't give us a lot of confidence, but let's just try to go through the data, shall we? I think one thing to note is that After 3 months of testing, keep in mind, a very gentle combination, the only significant improvement that they saw was the improvement in the lightening of the hyperpigmentation. They looked at things like size and number, but none of that was significant. It was only the lightening aspect. So that is the takeaway here.
Yay! So I think you can definitely, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can definitely pause and weigh through all the numbers in the chart. They did a lot. I like the idea of the paper to show that, you know, you test lactic acid by itself, you test ascorbic acid by itself, definitely not lactic acid, and then you test the combination to see if there's a synergistic effect. But I will say, first of all, 8% lactic acid is a very, very quick reminder, is that mild daily use level. So even as a exfoliant, it's very gentle. And then 1% ascorbic acid is so gentle that it is below our typical recommended amount of at least 5%. 5 to 15 is where most of the ascorbic acid data is. So I have no idea why they didn't test higher. But even so, it gives us a little insight into this combination.
I was just going to jump in and just also mention that this is a pretty weird study because they test this combination twice a day, which is, I guess, for a gentle treatment, they're like, probably needs to be used twice a day. But the other weird thing about this is that they didn't give them sunscreen. And they mentioned that they test between December and March, which they feel like should have less sun. But if you think about it, especially for hyperpigmentation studies, that is just, that's
poor practice.
I feel like, it's common that for hyperpigmentation studies, especially, they should have sunscreen. So I find this study just generally weird all around, on top of the typo. I don't know.
So I think the very surface level takeaway is we're not saying, oh, go out and buy that lactic acid plus ascorbic acid. It's to say, hey, it shouldn't interfere with each other. It the two works in very different ways. Take-home products with AHAs, both lactic and glycolic acid and ascorbic acid, are formulated in roughly the same neighborhood, in the 3 to 3.5 neighborhood is typically where you find it. So we would say if you're layering these two, it doesn't really matter. It should be fine. Again, the only thing you should be looking out for is, hey, am I experiencing any redness, any itchiness? Because obviously strength of your AHA and ascorbic acid can vary. So that's a very surface level takeaway.
Yes, I think you summed that up nicely. We found another study that actually, I guess, answers the question about what about vitamin C with other antioxidants?
This is a common question we get, especially when people hear about new, juicy, interesting antioxidant. We get questions like, can I use it with resveratrol? Can I use it with whatever extract? Generally speaking, we would say yes. There's whether or not that combination brings something new to the table to enhance vitamin C can kind of depend on the antioxidant. We will say the company that does a lot of work looking at these combinations is, not surprisingly, SkinCeuticals, or SkinCeuticals' mother company now, L'Oreal. We found this great paper that combined 15% ascorbic acid with neohesperidin, one of the antioxidants, and also a pine extract and vitamin E tocopherol and hyaluronic acid to see whether or not that improves air pollution-induced pigmentation. And they did a pretty extensive study that covers in vitro antioxidant studies. They looked at ex vivo, which means the human skin that's been cut out, to look at it for a shorter amount of time, but you can look at all the layers of skin and how that affects it. And they also did a clinical test on 40 healthy adults to show that this combination over 90 days was able to improve and combat pigmentation caused by pollution. This is not the only study that SkinCeuticals has done on combining vitamin C with other active ingredients. I think they've also they've combined it with Silymarin, which I think that product's out on the market. They've looked at it with, like, I think, apple stem cells. So generally speaking, if you have any doubts on whether or not vitamin C can be used with other antioxidants, we're going to say you're pretty safe there. I think you can just go for it.
Yeah. And I did want to call out, Gloria mentioned the pine bark extract. That's the Pinus pinaster bark. That's pycnogenol. You might hear about it. I think The Ordinary sells a serum of just pycnogenol. So hopefully that gives you some AOX combinations to think about in the real world. But yeah, L'Oreal would be the mother hub of how much can they patent and capture in the vitamin C landscape, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We should wrap up the segment with retinoids and specifically retinol. And I think retinol, we get a couple questions because people are aware of retinol's more more neutral, not as acidic pH. And so I think there's a concern about, especially with retinol being another ingredient that can be unstable. Is it okay to layer a lower pH product like vitamin C with retinol? But not to fear. L'Oreal, again, once again, has done a clinical where they look at this combination of retinol with vitamin C. It's a small study. It's actually two very small studies. One study is 8 volunteers, while another one is 11 volunteers. It's quite technical, though, because they actually do histology samples of these subjects and their use of this combination. Ultimately, we should mention that the weird thing is that they use different concentrations of these actives. So I think for the first study, they use a 0.07% retinol with 3.5% ascorbic acid, whereas the second study uses 0.04% retinol with a 3% vitamin C. So it's
oddly specific. Just the only...
Yes, exactly.
I don't know why. My theory is that they did the first study and then people forgot about it. And then so much time has gone by. The formula has changed 18,000 times. And they're like, whatever, this is a new combo now.
I think that's such a valid theory. I think that holds so much truth. But all in all, we should say that not only did they see results, improvement in collagen and whatnot, but the point of this episode is to show that this tolerance of this combination was also good as well. And I think the other thing we should point out here is that their retinol is a encapsulated retinol. And because of nowadays, encapsulated retinol is so common, it is meant to also protect retinol, its fragility in a sense. And so that's why we find that this combination is not problematic and can be used together with no issues. Yeah.
And I want to add that with retinol and vitamin C. So like Victoria mentioned, vitamin C, you will see it from pH of between maybe 3 to 3.5, and retinol is usually in formulas that's sitting around pH of 5 to 6-ish. We have to like go back to the early concept we mentioned of time, right? Like how long is it interacting at these pHs? Skin's natural pH is also around 5-ish. So once you apply vitamin C, your skin pH is gonna creep back up towards the 5 naturally by itself. So if you're layering the two, first of all, your pH, skin pH is already not going to be as low as like a vitamin C level of 3. It's already creeping back up. Then you're adding a product, a retinol product that's at that slightly higher pH. And this is all in theory, right? Like skin pH typically, based on what we've seen from cleanser studies, they self-calibrate in the order of 1 to 2 hours. So in that time, is retinol really dying a shocking, sad death because of this low pH? Probably not. And then like this paper shows, if the retinol is also encapsulated, that chance is even lower. So that's why the conclusion here is you're probably in the clear here as well.
Yes, exactly. And with that, we threw a lot of papers and combinations at you. We should take a quick break before we get into our more awkward combinations like niacinamide and peptides.
Take a break. All right. It's Animal Corner. I'm so excited. Hit me, Victoria.
All right. This is your Animal Corner fun fact of the day. This is for those trivia nights you might be having. All right. So today's Animal Corner is basically to tell you that there is a war going on in South Africa's uninhabited island called the Marion Island. Dun-dun-dun. Basically, I will read you a story. This is the Mouse-Free Marion Project. This is pest control on a grand scale. They have found that the Marion Island is uninhabited, but it is quite an important ecology site. There's a lot of birds that live out there that there's about nearly 30 bird species, and some of them are quite rare. For example, the wandering albatross, which is a massive bird that inhabits there. But they are getting infiltrated by mice. And we're talking about your very average classic mouse, okay? What they've been noticing is that these mice have caused significant damage to this island. Basically, they have put such a dent in the insect population on that island that they have had to find a new food source, and they are preying on these birds.
It's
crazy, actually. Yes, they have gotten so they're so aggro and intense that what they have found was that they burrow, right? That mice are burrowing in the ground, and they have noticed that they have a really nice setup underneath the nests of some of these birds, like the albatross. And they're like, oh, that's so nice. It's so warm. But also, their chicks have now become a food supply.
Oh, ew. Oh, no. Oh,
it's exactly. It's absolutely insane. And it's actually quite sad and scary. They've noticed that because these birds are absolutely unprepared, they don't have a predator. They don't know how to handle a predator. And they don't know how to protect their chicks. Oh. So they're noticing that these albatross chicks are getting just like slowly bitten at.
Oh,
right?
Ew. Oh.
And the parents don't know what to do. They actually just let it happen because they don't have a concept of a predator. It's really crazy. It's absolutely insane. Because what happens is they're seeing this like nibbling happening at these birds. And, you know, over time, sadly, the chicks die. They just at night are being bitten. And then during the day, recover. And then they're just like so tired because they're not able to sleep. And eventually, sadly, they die. And so some of the, some of the experts that are monitoring this, they were saying how it looks like something out of a zombie apocalypse because some of these birds, they have these like wound marks, you know, and the parents are just letting this happen. So I feel like this is a very depressing, gruesome scenario I've just painted, but I want you to know that the Mouse Free Marion Project is happening. This is pest control on an insane level. They are going to have 4 to 6 helicopters go in and drop about 550 tons of rodent pesticide across the island.
Oh my.
Okay. So it's an insane operation just to eradicate mice on this island. They have to be, it's been a whole, I think this has, I read the first article was in 2018, mm-hmm. and this project is planned to not kick off until 2027. Mm-hmm. This is how long of the planning has taken. Mm-hmm. And so just so you guys know, they had to look at specific pesticides so as to not hurt or impact the environment and the birds there. But they are going to raise about $25 million and
wow.
also get aid from the South African government to fight the mice. And that is your trivia of the day, is that we are waging war against the house mouse right now in South Africa. It's insane.
You know, I have to say, if, you know, a meteor comes and it is now the apocalypse, I'm just convinced the earth is just going to have cockroaches and like rodents left. Like,
yes.
They just seem the most adaptable, vicious creatures.
And it makes me think of, like, you know, those books we read in child and as children, like the Rats of Nim, things like that. I'm like, all valid, all possible. They're just like meant to survive. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
Yeah.
So anyways, not so fun fact, but with hope, you know, animal fun fact of the day.
Yay.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah. The fun should come in air quotes now. I feel like we should warn people
fun is the relative. Yes, this is an asshole scenario, the asshole animal of out there. But yeah, I was blown away. Just the amount of the huge operation to just save this one island, and also just how resilient mice can be.
Oh god, that image is horrifying. But anyway, let's move on to ingredient pairings. That's a little awkward with vitamin C on that very uplifting note.
All right. So, yes, let's wrap this up. Mm-hmm. I think the first ingredient we have to talk about is niacinamide. It's going to be an annual theme is, can you use niacinamide with vitamin C?
Yes. This drama comes up, yeah, pretty much every year. Long story short, it comes about because if you have a solution of niacinamide, you'll see it clear as water. If you have a solution of vitamin C, brand new, just dissolved into water, it is also completely clear. But if you pour the two into the same beaker, you will see that it turns bright yellow. And that combination has people kind of freaking out, like, oh my god, the two are interacting, they're not compatible. Which there is kind of a point in that they are forming a new complex. And this complex is giving it that color. This phenomenon has been studied quite extensively. Generally speaking, not to fear. So first of all, if we kind of dial back to high school chemistry, reactions don't complete. It's actually very rare that it goes to completion. So when you're combining the two, you're getting some of the complex, you're getting some of the vitamin C, you're getting some of the niacinamide. Moreover, this niacinamide ascorbic acid complex alone by itself has actually been studied to be still beneficial for skin. So generally speaking, we would chuck it in the, I don't want to say chuck it in the bucket, but we would put it in the bucket of, it is not super concerning. Another angle of this combination that gets kind of reviewed is that niacinamide comes, if you just dissolve niacinamide straight into water, it's a much more neutral pH than ascorbic acid. It's sitting around a 6-ish, and vitamin C being super low pH, there's also a school of thought that this low pH is going to cause niacinamide to degrade into niacin, which is irritating for some people and causes skin flushing. Can this happen? Yes. And again, going back to reactions, does it go to completion? How much of it does it happen? This is pretty minimal here because niacinamide itself is pretty stable, pretty robust. You usually need to bake it or put it in drastically lower pH than most vitamin C products are found in for that to be a very significant source. Now, if you're formulating the two together in the same product, over time, as I said on the shelf, can more niacin form? Maybe. But we would say for most normal skin, niacin isn't even really the devil per se. It's just another form of it. So we would say, so generally the takeaway here is, if you notice that your skin is having a reaction, if it is showing that flushing, then the two particular products that you're combining can be causing you a problem. But generally speaking, we wouldn't worry about this combination at all.
Yeah, exactly. I think the key word is, you know, everybody's skin is different. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to have flushing because of this combo? Yes. And you've discovered that this is not right for you. But for a majority and for those who are willing to try, it's not the reason to, I guess, not have these ingredients in your routine in the beginning or give it a try, basically. And I did want to throw out there that there is a clinical out there that actually tested this combination. On top of including tranexamic acid and arbutin as well, they used this combo for 1 month. And they did mention that no patients had experienced intolerance with this combo and were all able to continue this combination without adverse effect. So there's a piece of data for you out there to just, you know, explain that this combination, for the most part, should be okay. And always listen to your skin.
Yep. So that is the niacinamide and vitamin C drama. And we're going to wrap this episode up with kind of a dense one. And we get this question a lot, which is, can I use vitamin C with peptides? And we're going to open up with our classic line. Well, it depends because peptides is a very wide category. And the same reason, pH is one of the main reasons why that gets cited again. Generally speaking, peptides are also in a more neutral pH. It can exist in a range because, again, peptides is really a wide category, but it's in a very similar pH as typical skincare, typical retinoid products, which is between 5 and 6-ish. So this one, we hear about it from both angles, right? We hear about it saying, oh, peptides shouldn't be in contact with low pH. We also hear vitamin C shouldn't be in contact with peptides because of the higher pH. So what gives, Victoria?
I'm just going to say peptides is a very broad category. Mm-hmm. So for us to make general sweeping statements is hard, you know, but ultimately, you know, if you've been, you know, layering vitamin C and peptides, for the most part, they should be fine. I want to just default back to the whole, you know, this is a temporary interaction. And because of that, you know, if you're layering these two, it shouldn't be a problem. But I think the one peptide in particular that we should talk about is copper peptides, because that is a fragile soul, that one.
Yes.
Especially.
Copper peptide is, I feel like we've been getting questions about this for like years, and we haven't addressed this super directly because the data is a little sparse and harder for us to talk about. But copper peptide itself can be pH sensitive, and ascorbic acid it definitely interacts with copper ions in general. And I should also mention that there are also different types of copper peptides out there. Some are encapsulated, some are free-forming. So there's a lot of factors here. That's why we don't like giving specifics. And I will say that I haven't seen anyone test copper peptides with ascorbic acid in any, there isn't a very neat piece of data we can present to you and say, this is why it's okay, or this is why it's not okay.
Yeah.
But ascorbic acid's degradation in the presence of copper ion in general is pretty well established in industries outside of skincare. And remember when we mentioned about timing of degradation and how bad it is very important here. I'm going to cite a quick line from a paper here that actually looked at just ascorbic acid in general with when you put it in water that comes from a copper piping. So there's some loose copper ions hanging about in your water. And I'm going to quote the paper here. In drinking water samples contaminated with copper from pipes and buffered with bicarbonate, 35% of the added vitamin C was oxidized within 15 minutes. And then after three hours of incubation, just at room temperature, 93% of the added ascorbic acid has been oxidized. So this is where we'd say
highly reactive.
Yes, timing isn't great. 15 minutes is definitely within the time of your skincare routine. And then 3 hours is within the time of how an active may slowly be absorbed into your skin. So I would say this definitely rings a little bit of an alarm bell for us.
Yes, and I think it's relevant even though it's not in our industry. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at this point, there's no data in the industry to share. But I think because of that, you know, our stance is that, you know, sadly, with no data in the industry, you know, we can't give you the most realistic picture. Mm-hmm. But I believe this data is prevalent enough with a time span for us to personally be like, not really a layering combo I'd be trying to do myself.
Right, exactly.
Actually, yeah.
But given that timeline, if you want to use one in the morning, one at night, we would say that's probably okay. Just wouldn't recommend using them in the same routine.
Yes, totally. All right, so with that, we should sum up everything we just talked about. First of all, hopefully you guys have realized that with most ingredients, even niacinamide, you're most likely going to be okay if you've been layering these together. In terms of peptides, copper peptide is really the only one that we would recommend separating them out and don't have them in the same routine. But all in all, we just want to keep in mind that, you know, layering is a temporary scenario. These combinations are only happening for a few hours at most. And so with that, hopefully this gives you peace of mind as you guys are trialing and building out your skincare routines. So with that, we hope this episode was helpful. But if you've got more questions, where can they find us, Gloria?
You can find us on our website at chemistconfessions.com. You can write to us at info@chemistconfessions.com. And you can DM us on our Instagram at chemist.confessions. That is also where we pull you guys for your questions, and your responses help directly shape and form these episodes. So definitely check us out there. And we will see you guys next week.
Bye.